All right, so you have a guy from a Jewish family living in the United States, and the guy who has Native American roots living in Japan on the radio. This is the making of a joke, but instead it's the making of a conversation on the Holocaust, aka the Holo-hoax. Ryan Dawson joins me tonight on the Bob Tuscan Show to do just that, have a conversation about one of the most taboo of topics. And Ryan, we've talked a lot about 9/11. Of course, your documentary film, The War on Deception, a great piece on 9/11. And it's extremely taboo. We've been confronted with many of critics, and it's definitely something that many people shy away from and don't dare talk about for risk of coming off as anti-American. Well, to an even more extreme degree, anybody who talks about the Holocaust in a contrary fashion to what the official story is runs the risk of being anti-Semitic. And well, we're going to break through that notion because I happen to come from a Jewish family, and you happen to come from a background of any people who would have the right to talk about genocide and Holocaust. Native Americans certainly have that prerogative, and we'll get into this tonight on the show. I'm glad to have you back. It's always a pleasure, man. How you doing?
Very good, Bob, and it's good to be back on the show. And you're right. By having a native and a Jew talking to each other, you can dismiss a couple of the typical cards that are played with the gender card or the religion card. And
Sure.
you're right about 9/11 too. Right after 9/11 happened, it was very taboo to question or say anything. But 5, 10 years down the road, it was okay. But with World War II, that I've covered a lot of topics. I've criticized military spending, I've criticized religion, I've criticized 9/11, the Iraq War, and other wars, but I've never come across anything more taboo than talking about the Holocaust,
Isn't that
of
funny?
World War II.
Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah. But I think the reason it's so important is because World War II is the war that justifies all the wars after it. And so you have this sort of overlapping interest between the Zionist and just the war party in general to make sure that that narrative is exactly how they want it to go. And so you have to have the Holocaust involved, because if you don't have the theatrical stories, open lampshades and 6 million and people burned in ovens and things, then there's really nothing to differentiate what the Allied powers did during and the war and before the war with from the Axis powers. Because
Right.
everybody murdered civilians, everybody starved people, everybody had prisoners, everybody tortured, etc. Bombed civilian cities, burned them. The only thing that makes the Nazis the epitome of evil over Stalin or the UK or the French or the Americans is the Holocaust. So without that part of the story, World War II is no longer good versus evil. It's just a bunch
Sure.
of colonial imperialists fighting each other and murdering tens of millions of people.
And we want to be attached to that fairy tale of good versus evil, the Nazis versus, the freedom fighters. It's the same sort of narrative in several respects as today. And on top
Yeah,
of
you need
that,
a new Hitler constantly.
yeah, exactly, a new Hitler. But on top of that, Ryan, we have something that has become the justification for a criminal state in the Middle East. Their country's motto is never again, never again. Of course, referring to the Holocaust. And this has been, to a
Yeah,
greater
the phrase
extent,
was coined by a rabbi who supported the gunning down of 29 Palestinians while they were praying.
well, never again only applies to a certain group of Ashkenazis, Ryan. It doesn't have to do with other people being put in essentially ghettos and concentration camps, if you will. This only applies to a certain group of political ideologues that are pushing a Zionist agenda. And that right there is another reason why it's so entrenched in our media and our culture, because of the influence that we know is there of this group of special interest, namely Zionists.
Even if the entire official narrative of World War II were absolutely true, there's still no justification to take it out on the Palestinians for what some Germans had done
as
Nazis.
And that being said, there's no justification to take it out on Sephardics.
It's like even if Al-Qaeda had attacked New York, and why would you bomb Iraq? That's like bombing Mexico after Pearl Harbor. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And speaking of Pearl Harbor, we have an obvious false flag to kick that whole scenario off.
We knew about Pearl Harbor as well.
We most certainly did. It was even broadcasted in the newspaper the week before that this attack was coming. And they even watched the planes fly overhead. And they knew these planes were going to attack.
They broke the Japanese code, and they had the McCollum memo, which goaded them 8 different points that they wanted to do to push Japan into war. The oil embargo was the final one, and they did all 8 points, including having destroyers and ships in Japanese waters. That's not to justify Imperial Japan, but the thing is, everyone recognizes the evil of the losing side, but the winners of World War II were just as sadistic and went on to murder millions of people. You'll never see a Holocaust memorial for the 2 million Vietnamese killed in a completely senseless offensive war in Vietnam, or the millions of Iraqis who have died in recent wars, or Koreans, etc., and pick a battle, and the hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans, particularly Nicaragua, etc.
I mean, our list could go on and on, Ryan. In the last 100 years...
You never see a museum for that.
No, and in the last 100 years, there have been Holocaust, to use the same terminology, that really, really, really don't even come close to the atrocities that we might think the Holocaust was all about. In other words, I was all convoluted in saying that. But what I was trying to get across here is that we have Chinese, 20 million Chinese, something ridiculous like that. We have the Holodomor. I was just going to say that, with several million people dead there in Russia.
The Congo,
yes.
8 million.
Millions there. But yet we see, and don't get me wrong, folks, there's no justification, even if it's 100 people. There's no justification for that. I'm not saying that was right. But it's just this double standard where we will spend tons and tons of time with movie after movie and make it illegal to question in certain countries on the Holocaust, but yet completely disregard, or at the very least, not cover to the same extent Holocaust that really, really are significant and complete atrocities on this earth.
Or not cover to any extent. Another one missing there is of the Germans. Post-World War II, millions of Germans died in camps, and they didn't have beds, and they didn't have kitchens, and they didn't have the things labor camps had. They just rounded them up and gave them no provisions and let them starve to death. And then
they were Nazis, Ryan. They were Nazis.
Million who were displaced.
But they were Nazis.
Germans.
No, that all Germans are Nazis. And all Nazis
collectively. And that's the thing. The Nazi Party was always a minority of Germans.
Interesting. We got to take a break, Ryan, and we'll come back in just a second. Our guest tonight, Ryan Dotson. We're talking about the Holocaust and so much more. Once again, we're joined by Ryan Dotson tonight. You got a guy from a Jewish family and a guy with Native American background, talking about the Holocaust. And we've been meaning to do this for some time now, since we had David Cole on our shows. You introduced me to him, and we decided, heck, this would be one hell of a show. They couldn't accuse us of being unsympathetic to genocide or anti-Semitic. So there you go. Ryan, I think for me, my introduction to this conversation was one of Ernst Zundel and some of the other figures who were arrested for coming out against the official narrative in whatever capacity they may or may not have come out against it in. And for me, that's really, really scary to think that we should make it illegal to cover something or to have a different perspective on history. That right there is a slippery slope and a scary one. And for the record, 5,999,999. Come get us, right?
If you were to say that, if you were in Canada instead of the U.S., you could go to jail for that. And if I were in Germany or Austria or Poland or many other countries, Russia, I would go to jail also. It's because you're in the U.S. and I'm in Japan that we are allowed to say that, or even as a question, not even a statement. But it is illegal to revise the numbers or the story, anything that has anything to do with the Holocaust and World War II of Jewish people, not non-Jewish people, though. And that is a free speech issue. But it's a very sensitive topic because people assume, well, if you're not buying this hook, line, and sinker, then your only possible motive must be you just hate Jewish people or you hate the Jewish religion or something like that. And yet we have revision in every single other war. Numbers change and things change in American Civil War, the Revolutionary War, World War One, pick a war, the Iraq War, the first Iraq War. Everybody knows now that that whole babies on incubators speech was a lie. And if you were to point that out, no one's going to accuse you of being pro-Saddam. No one's going to accuse you of hating Kuwaitis. You're just going to say that it is a fact that that story about babies on incubators was a lie, and it helped kick off a war and justify the U.S. intervening and attacking Iraq. Now, you can come up with other reasons why you think they should have attacked Iraq anyway, but the official reasons were lies, and no one's going to accuse you of being racist for pointing that out now. Enough time has passed, and the emotional smoke is cleared to where you can talk about that objectively. And you can talk about other wars objectively, except for World War II, except for the Holocaust, because there's actually legislation that punishes people with jail time for talking about it. And I just finished an interview with Guillermo Rudolph, a scientist who just did his chemical analysis and reports, and was taken away from his six-month-old daughter and thrown in jail for 4 years. For saying the wrong opinion. And as you mentioned, Zondel was thrown in jail. David Cole was beaten and left on the street. He was an American, so they couldn't throw him in jail. But
And a Jewish one at that.
Yes, he's Jewish. Which shouldn't matter, but it does. If you're not anti-Semitic, you're a self-hating Jew.
Right, right.
But it's ridiculous as saying, well, if you question the Holocaust, then... It's like saying if you don't like Obama, it's because you're racist. Or if you like Obama, it's only because he's black. Either way. Or if you criticize Lincoln, then you support slavery or something. That's utterly preposterous. It's a straw man. And no one's out to hurt anybody's feelings. No one's trying to take away from the suffering of Jewish people and others who were put in labor camps. They starved to death, they were beaten to death, they worked to death, they were shot. They were large numbers of people killed, and a lot died from disease. But I think what the myth is people assume if you won't say 6 million, the only alternative is zero. And no one's saying nobody died. That's ridiculous. But that number, 6 million, has never been from history. Even Raoul Hilberg and Holocaust scholars have never put the number that high. That figure comes from religious prophecy and post-war rumor and propaganda, as did the rumors of human-made soap or lampshades or shrunken heads. That was known Allied propaganda. No one still claims that in the official story. They allow others to say it, and even witnesses say they saw it, but it never happened. It was post-war propaganda that built off of wartime rumors. And they even went into Dachau, which originally began as a prison camp for German dissidents and was converted later. And they brought in the city of Weimar there and into Buchenwald, and they showed them these props of lampshades and all this ridiculous paraphernalia, and none of it ever happened. But it was part of the denazification program. And that's fine in the 40s, but we've had enough time to sort all that out. And we know that that isn't true. The other side will say, well, that's just a slippery slope. Okay, there weren't any lampshades or soap or anything, but surely 6 million died in gas chambers. Well, actually, no. When you look at that, the gas chamber part of the Holocaust is probably the weakest link, as Michael Shermer even admitted. And let's say, well, why does it matter how they died? It matters how they died, and it matters how many died, because without that, as I said in the beginning, you can't really differentiate the crimes of the Allies from the Axis powers. You have to have something worse that the Germans did in order to justify the entire war. And if you don't have that, then people would look at World War II as they should, as just a monstrous catastrophe, and with no justification, would never want a war again. Instead, with this story, they're able to sell it to the public as a necessary evil. Sometimes we have to go to war to kill the Hitlers and just the epitome of evil. And the Nazis have always been, since that time, Godwin's Law, the go-to example of evil to invade every nation after World War II. Every nation in the US or the UK have wanted to attack. They just create a new Hitler and they say they're doing what Germany was doing. Putin's the new Hitler. So-and-so's the new Hitler. Ahmadinejad was a Hitler. Saddam was a Hitler. Gaddafi was a Hitler. And they're able to sell it.
Bush was a
Well, Bush's grandfather actually worked with the Nazis. That's
Hitler.
the ironic thing.
Well, it's funny,
But a lot
even
of people did. Like, not everyone knew in the first 5 years when the economy was turning around, not because of Hitler, but because of his lead economist got rid of the central bank. It seemed at the time that, no one knew what was about to happen. Like, it seemed like a thriving, successful state. They didn't know they were going to invade Poland and everything that happened.
Another act of evil, if we're talking World War II, slightly outside of the realm of the Holocaust, was the bombs being dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And you being in Japan, I'm sure this is something that you've considered. Was that necessary? And the simple answer is no, it wasn't.
No, not at all. And Nagasaki gets overshadowed by Hiroshima because the bombing of Nagasaki was even less necessary, and they used a plutonium bomb much stronger than the original uranium bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima.
Interesting. Let's talk about that when we get back here. Hiroshima, Nagasaki. It's the Bob Tuscan Show, Ryan Dawson, our special guest tonight. From what I understand, Ryan, the Japanese were already surrendering at that point.
Yes, they've been trying to surrender, but the US wanted what they call total surrender. But they just never were going to agree. They wanted to use the bombs to show the Russians, and they waited till the last minute because the Russians had agreed, the Yalta agreements, that they would get into the Pacific theater 3 months after the surrender of Germany, which was exactly August 6th and August 9th when the bombs were dropped, which is days before that time period was coming. They didn't want to divide up Japan into North and South Japan, the way they were already dividing Germany into East and West Germany with the Russians. They wanted it to be under the American sphere of influence. And so the bombs completely solidified that and scared the Soviet Union, because at that time the US was the only nation that had the bombs. And then they dropped the second bomb on Nagasaki, which was in the mountains, showing they could take out anything anywhere because they had an even stronger bomb than before. And still the Japanese didn't surrender. It actually had the reverse effect. After Hiroshima was bombed, they stopped trying to surrender after Nagasaki. Again, the majority of the Japanese forces weren't in Japan. They were in Manchuria. But they eventually surrendered. And that was the end of the war on paper. But then, of course, after the Imperial Japanese were forced out of Korea, the United States invades. And we had the Korean War, another pointless conflict. And during that war, at the tail end of it, They couldn't get their nukes for political reasons with China, but they bombed everything with a roof in North Korea. About 30% of the entire country was destroyed, and millions of Koreans were killed. I'm not talking about their army, I'm just talking about Koreans, just people. If you had a grocery store, you got bombed. If you had anything, they bombed everything in North Korea before 1952 at the end of the war. And now look at that, what that's caused in the conflict we have today.
Yep. It's scary, and these are the same powers that are in control today. Operation Paperclip, back to the Holocaust, was, of course, a trade, essentially, where we received several German scientists, several Nazi scientists for
it was more than a brain drain. It wasn't just the scientists and engineers. There were a lot of Nazis that just paid their way into that. It wasn't just for the rocket scientists. But that's about, they don't care about, there's no moral or ethical standard they're holding. They're just trying to acquire more power. And they don't care if it comes from a Nazi or a former fascist Italian or Japanese. They used the Yakuza post-World War II as well, extreme right-wing Japanese mafia, to smuggle out tungsten and metals from China because Japan still had an intelligence network set up there from invading. And they were completely allied and paid through Lockheed Martin and other fronts by the CIA and put into political power. First prime minister of Japan was mafia. So they're working with the mob and they're working with prior former Nazis. They work with criminals today. Where do you think ISIS got its money from, or al-Nusra, or al-Qaeda, or the Mujahideen, or MEK, or MEK al-Kuk, or Jandallah, or al-Sahab? Well, actually, al-Sahab, Saudi Arabia, but all the rest of the ones I named are from the United States. All of them. The United States and NATO, the armed terrorists and mafia fronts now. So it's nothing new. It's been going on since World War II. From the OSS and now the CIA. And, well, now there are many layers. The CIA has so many NGOs that they use as mediums, which we saw in Ukraine as well. So they have no problem arming and aiding and financially supporting known terrorists as long as, they're on the payroll. They keep the drugs flowing. They keep the violence going and give pretext for conflicts. That's what terrorist groups are for. They're modern privateers. And they always leak back to government.
Big government, little government. No, it's big government. And it's big media. And it's, the media is a major part of this, especially when it comes to the Holocaust. And we talked about countless movies on the Holocaust. And, we got guys like Steven Spielberg. And we got books. That are completely fabricated, Eli Wiesel and Anne Frank and all these books, and that's how this becomes dogma.
Well, Anne Frank was half and half, but yeah, I know what you mean. But Hollywood especially, it's easy to sell the narrative of good guy versus bad guy, and the colonial powers, the French and British especially, why does West Africa speak French? It wasn't because they all decided to study it together. Why does Australia speak English? They were colonies. And later they stopped calling them colonies. They started calling places protectorates, or they had other terms, but like Palestine was a protectorate. It was just a colony. And the borders today in Africa and in the Middle East were mainly drawn by the British. And it's led to so many conflicts and so much death and tribalism and infighting, going all the way back to World War I, which would take a long time to go over, just mentioning it. We can go over it if you like. But this is what's been happening from the colonial powers. But to talk about the Holocaust, again, because of all the movies and because it's so emotional, and I think the other thing is it was on video, whereas prior atrocities, you don't see film of the dead Native Americans. You don't see film, really, of Vietnam because it was in the middle of a war. A little bit of pictures, and there was a lot of outrage just from that. But in World War II, because of the camps, you see footage of all these emaciated, you know, skinny to the bone people starving to death. And so I think for the first time, people could see what war looks like, even though that's how it was in Holodomor and all the other places where people starved to death. That wasn't on film, and the Holocaust was. And I think that's what gave it its power, and that's why it's pushed in Hollywood. And I don't think people in Hollywood are all having some racist agenda or anything. It's just that people have seen the footage. It's something they can sell. They'll make a buck off of anything. And so that's what they push. Spielberg, he may be different, but I don't think in general it's malevolence. But I mean, that's my speculation. I can't prove the motives of people making the films, but I do think the reason World War II became the war you can't talk about is because it came at a time period where there was film and television, whereas prior to that, you couldn't see it. It was radio or less.
Yep, that's exactly right. Ryan Dawson is our guest. Last time we had you on, we talked about your new book. How's the book going?
Oh, excellent. Actually, the paper version of the book's coming out next week, Separation of Business and State. And that's really the core issue. We have to separate business and state. That's the real fascism, and that's a problem in every country. And it may be more prominent in the U.S. because they're the face. They kind of things more directly, invading countries. But the majority of death and poverty in the world isn't caused directly by war. It's from banks. And I can't think of an institution more evil than the IMF.
Mm-hmm.
They intentionally use predatory lending to impoverish the third world. Even when kids are starving, pot bellies and everything, and they don't care. There's no accountability, and there's such a degree of separation. They don't have any skin in the game between those causing it and the victims that I think it just doesn't register. They have their money and they don't want to think about it.
It's evil. And
that's the Holocaust, really.
That is the Holocaust. Yep. You're absolutely right.
About tens of millions in the Horn of Africa alone.
Yeah, but let's not talk about that.
It's totally preventable. Yeah.
Let's not talk about that. Let's obsess over our one particular Holocaust that has been fabricated in many regards.
It has been fabricated. I mean, gas chambers, especially. How is it possible? I mean, of all the camps the Allies liberated, they didn't find any gas chambers. They're all in Poland, all discovered by the Soviets. So you're reducing down to just a few camps, and that's where we get the stories of gas chambers. And yet there's no physical evidence for any of it. And the architectural and chemical and all the evidence points to they're not being gas chambered. Now, lack of evidence doesn't mean evidence of something either, but when you have supposed gas chambers doubling as showers that have glass windows in them, that have a well and have working water, and all these prisoners who took showers there, they cherry-pick witnesses who will say, yeah, there were gas chambers, and I was right at the door, and I got yanked out and saved, but I saw people gas.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So
sure they
many
were.
More people saying,
yep. Final segment coming up, Ryan.
And
hold
water
on.
Came out.
Hold
instead.
On, Ryan. Okay, it's our final segment with Ryan Dawson tonight on the Bob Tuscan Show. And Ryan, I want to thank you for coming on again. We appreciate your research, man.
Well, it's an important topic, and it's a topic I hate talking about because it's there's just so many preliminary things you have to get out of the way. You really have to prove you're not a racist. You're not a crazy, you're not a bunch of things before you can talk about it. And you get that with 9/11 too, thanks to the wackos over at Jonestown with, you know, and people denying airplanes and all the other nonsense, where it just becomes a silly topic. You can't have a serious discussion about it because of all the crazy things that were said. But you had equally ridiculous stories in World War II talking about prisoners thrown in a pit with a bear and an eagle, where the eagle would attack the eyes and the bear would bite off their genitals and things like it obviously didn't happen. You have stories of electric floors, all kinds of nonsense. They're just physically could not.
Electric floors. I didn't even hear about that one.
Yeah, that was one. Treblinka is one of the best, where they buried all these bodies, dug them all back up, cremated them, and then put that back in the ground, which was clearly a transit camp. And Eric Hunt has done a good documentary on that. They won't allow archaeology there for religious taboo, but I think it's more because they know there's nothing there. There's just should be evidence for these things. And the only evidence they have are a few cherry-picked witnesses. But that's going against so many, a multitude time more of witnesses and victims of labor camps who never saw any of that, never saw a gas chamber, never heard of that. And they were also in the exact same camps, would have no reason to lie. And people who are saying they did see all of that would have a reason to lie.
I almost feel as if they...
It should be 100% or nothing. You can't have a majority of the camp saying, no, there were, we had showers.
Sure.
People starved, of course. And there was Zycon B used for delousing, and there's brush and blue stains in those rooms. But there aren't stains in the supposed gas chambers. And how can you have gas staining one room where they deloused clothing and not another where they're supposedly gassing people every day? And if it's really a death camp, why have kitchens and bedrooms and everything else and use them for labor? If the goal was really just to exterminate people, why have anything? Just let them, die of thirst within 3 days. They were using them as labor, which is horrible. It's slave labor. It's forced labor. And it's absolutely horrific. But just because something's terrible doesn't mean you have the right to just exaggerate it on indefinitely just to make it worse than what your side did.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sure if the Americans had started to lose the war, the Canadians had started to lose the war, then the internment camps that they had for Japanese and German people, they would have starved. The difference is they were winning.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the illness was definitely a...
we had typhoid. You had typhus, yeah. Of course.
And that's how and Smith, or and Frank, rather, died.
Well, yeah, a lot of people died of typhus in the First World War too, and that's why the delousing was so important. They had delousing in Ellis Island too. I mean, it was common. Now we have shampoos and things to get rid of lice, but we're talking 70 years ago, and things are very different. And it's not that they did it out of benevolence for the prisoners. They wanted them alive so they could use them for labor. But it was still a life-saving practice, not a death sentence, to get deloused. And that's why they shaved their heads and think, why would you bother tattooing people if you're just going to kill them? It just doesn't make any sense. It never has. Yet you're just not allowed to talk about it. And I personally think that learning that 6 million people may not have died should be good news. That's great, right? I mean, good, but they say no, that the higher the better. It's as if the association with being victims is more important to them than the much more, less horrible act would be if you found out that, oh, actually it was maybe 4 million or less than that. That ought to be something to celebrate. But instead, they wanted a number to be as high as possible because the Holocaust has become an industry. And they actually are using their deaths to make money. It's disgusting. It's like funeral practices for religions. They guilt trip and blackmail you into saying, hey, pay my organization thousands of dollars to put this body in a box, or you didn't love them. And of course, everyone's going to do it. I mean, they don't want to not have a funeral. But I mean, they've found a way to literally profit from death. And even though it doesn't make any sense at all, the Holocaust has replaced religion as what Jews identify with. And it's been justifying the behavior of Israel, which is more akin to the Nazi state than any modern state around today. Of the way they treat Palestinians and African immigrants in Israel, as well as a pecking order among different types of Jews. It's absolutely disgusting, racial apartheid. It's an expansionist colonial state. They keep Gaza as an outdoor prison. They bulldoze homes down. They ethnically cleanse people. and yet they're always playing the victim. And they have unconditional support from Zionist Jews and Christians, mainly from America, who only view them in the light of, well, they can do whatever they want because they were victims in World War II, even though it has nothing to do with Palestinians.
Yep, absolutely. Never again. What does that mean to you, really?
I wish it would be never again, but it's not never again because people are dying now, and they're re-evading Iraq as we speak. It's constant, and the war party marches on, and their best salesman is World War II.
Folks,
I don't want anybody killing anybody. I don't want anybody bombed. No sane person wants anybody to be put in a camp or starved to death or have their house bulldozed down. But there are a lot of people who aren't sane. The tribalism and nationalism is so strong, they say, hey, Ephraim, God gave us this land. We racially inherited this dirt from our real estate God and everybody else on it. You know, they should just go live in an Arab country. Zionists view countries as ethnicities because that's what they view themselves as, a Jewish country. Therefore, their neighbors must be Arab countries, black countries, white countries. They can't see a nation as a place where people live. It's where the, you know, category lives. And they think land is divided by ethnicity and race, which to them it is. But to normal, well-adjusted people, it is not. I mean, what would the United States be, for example? I mean, I'm living in Japan, for example. It's not, you don't racially inherit land. That's a really, like, kindergarten-level concept. But to a Zionist, nope. They're so filled with hate and resentment, and I think a lot of it is being raised with this fear, and a lot of them in the beginning were survivors of World War II, and they needed, it's like a kid that gets abused by their parents then going and abusing their kids. They pass the violence on, and we had, it seemed like a bunch of dysfunctional, abused people who went on abusing others. It's just becoming a bully.
Yep.
Because they got bullied. And that cycle needs to break.
I was just going to say that. That certainly does. And here I am breaking it. Here you are breaking it and exposing it for what it is. And that's what we need to do. That's definitely what
but
we need to do.
We'll face consequences for that. I'll have guests who won't come on the show because I even discussed the issue. And I say, it's ridiculous, you know.
And I've had guests on
for that. Like if you,
sorry to interrupt, but I've had guests, namely Josh Rubner from the policy from the lobby against the occupation of Israel or whatever it's called, you know, pro-Palestinian anti-Zionist group from Washington that refused to come on my show, and we're on the same team in that respect, and they still won't go on my show because of my views on 9/11 and the Holocaust and things like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just go where the evidence is, and I'm willing to back it up and prove it. And, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Fine. About 9/11 or World War II or whatever. I'm not dogmatic about any of it, but it's just a shame that people are thrown in prison for saying the wrong thing. You can say whatever you want, as long as you're not advocating killing people or anything. But if you want to say, I think this number was lower or higher. Personally, I think that Hiroshima death total is way too low, given the size of Asian cities, given the size of how many people died in Tokyo from firebombings and similar. I just don't think 100,000 is even close to how many
Absolutely.
People probably actually died.
Ryan, we're going to have to do it again, man. Thank you so much. That's Ryan Dawson, ladies and gentlemen. Yep, we're out of time. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much.